Side 7. Man of Two Worlds by Frank Herbert and Brian Herbert. Continuing on page 251.
Didn't sound like it when he was talking to that trooper. What did he mean he'd stake the man out on the plane?
That. They pin a man in a hot place with Inserim stakes. Eventually the armor breaks down, and fire consumes him.
Good God! That's taking care of their own.
They can be very severe in punishment. That poor man will suffer much because he cannot return here for 6 months.
No doubt.
But you were so brave and strong. I feared for you. And that legionnaire in full armor was like a child in your hands.
Our hands?
Ryle intruded.
Remember that?
Nishi pressed herself against Lut, her head in the crook of his neck.
You are not only rich, but strong. Oh, I am so lucky.
Lut held her tightly and bent for a kiss, but she turned her head away.
No, I might be very weak.
Good.
No,
she struggled in his arms.
Please do not make me call for help.
Would you really?
I think so. You do not want to test it, and neither do I. Besides, we have other matters to discuss.
She freed herself and stepped back.
Our marriage contract?
That can wait. First, we must decide what to do about the press.
What the hell does the press have to do with us?
There is one called Subiyama who was with you at the battle and now knows you are in here. In a way, it is funny. She hired the Zone Patrol Squad of the U.S. Consulate to spy on our ship. She wishes to know when you emerge and where you will go.
She hired the whole squad? How do you know?
We know everything the Zeeps do.
Zeeps?
Zone Patrol. ZP. Zeeps. This Subiyama is a fat lady, but very sexed. She is, how you say, shacked up with one of the Zeeps. Do you wish her removed, or...
Let it go for now. She could be useful.
Ah, my protector is very sly. Perhaps you will bargain better than I thought. I must be careful. But you will sleep now, sweet Lut, and I will guard that you are not disturbed.
She tucked him into bed and dodged his groping hands under the pretext of hanging up his robe.
You must not touch unless I say, she said.
You're pretty good at avoiding it.
I have had much practice, Lut.
What about the stuff in my armor's pockets?
I will get that later. Now you will sleep. It is the doctor's order, and it is my order.
Better do what she says, Ryle cautioned. You'll need all of your wits about you when it comes to the bargaining. And I can sense your fatigue.
Don't you mean our fatigue?
I, too, am low on energy. But our flesh is not yet fully healed, and I must image more repairs.
Well, do it while I'm asleep. It makes me sick when you turn my eyes inward.
Nishi brought a chair to the foot of the bed and composed herself there with her feet tucked under her.
Sleep, sweet Lut,
she whispered.
Sweet Lut,
he thought. It was a pleasant thought, and it helped him drift into slumber. Ryle waited until the mental rhythms told him Lut was deeply asleep, and then, fighting the induced urge to join him in slumber, swiveled his eyes inward. It was a complex imaging problem, with timing and placement that required a nicety of application. Presently, a small slip of paper drifted from the air above Nishi onto her lap. She picked it up and looked at the message there. Do nothing to awaken Lut. Our lives depend on it. This message is from the one who shares his body. Eat this paper if you wish to learn more. She looked at the sleeping figure and then, with a pensive expression, chewed and swallowed the note. Ryle materialized another note above her. She caught it before it reached her lap.
How do you do that?
She whispered. Having anticipated the question, Ryle already had provided the answer on the new message. I have the power to create such things. That should prove the truth of what I tell you. And I tell you not to get him the basil. It would be very dangerous. Eat this message, and I will provide another. Obediently, Nishi ate the second note and looked up at the place where the messages originated. Presently, another note materialized there, and wide-eyed, she watched it drift to her lap before picking it up and reading it. My name is Ryle, and Lut has stolen my body. Lut's body was severely damaged in an accident. He seeks to gain complete control of this body with the basil, which is a drug to me. But the basil will make him ineffective too, because this is mostly my flesh. Now, eat this message too. She ate the note and whispered, What do you want of me? The next note was a time materializing. Ryle found the effort drew more energy than anticipated. Deny him the basil, and I will get you to Earth with much money. Eat this note.
But I want the marriage to this man, she whispered after swallowing the paper.
Ryle drew on fading energies to answer, That can be managed. But his mother is sure to raise objections, and she could prove difficult. Trust me. Do not trust Lut. He wishes only to use your body and gratify his disgusting lust. I share his mind and know this. Now eat this note. Slowly, Nishi masticated the paper and swallowed it. When no other message was forthcoming, she bent close to the sleeping figure.
How do I know this is true? Tell me.
But Ryle, too, drained of energy, had joined his fleshmate in slumber. Deep snores shook the recumbent figure. Chinese population controls of the last century contributed to this crisis. With more than 40% of their people over age 65 and millions of one-child families, it was inevitable the new generation would throw off restrictions and compete in the breeding arena. They were only temporarily delayed by a ratio of 3.4 males to every female, an imbalance due mostly to earlier female infanticide. They met this by drastic measures such as outlawing abortions, economic benefits for live births, forced female immigration from neighbor countries, a law permitting divorce on grounds of infertility, and assignation bureaus to spread pornography and promote casual liaisons. The Lebensraum crisis in SC analysis. Lorna Subayama stared at Lou Doty with delight and amazement.
I'm your first. You mean it?
They sat in the Murphy bed of quarters obtained for Subayama by Sue Ellen Pratt. It was a cramped apartment by Earth standards, but Sue Ellen had assured her it was in a security area whose inviolability was guaranteed by the Legion. Subayama had no doubt that Sue Ellen was taking a kickback on the rental, but that was part of the game here. And the two small rooms did include a tiny kitchen and an adequate dry bath. The bed, though, could only be described as intimate. She and the sergeant, she knew as Lou Doty, had arrived almost 3 hours earlier after his afternoon shift, their arms loaded with Inserum containers of black market produce. Subayama prided herself on her culinary abilities and frequently said, People who don't like to eat aren't any good in bed either. Her new lover had definite tastes in food. He demanded she cook him something with basil. He pronounced it strangely, calling it basil, but there was no doubt what he meant. The basil sauce she made for the outrageously expensive caribou steaks evoked an odd reaction. He actually slurped it up, washing it down with an American Chablis of doubtful provenance and showing increasing signs of inebriation. His reactions in bed she found equally amazing. He obviously admired her ample, darkly tanned flesh and, in the throes of sex, called her his blessed Habiba.
He also shouted several times, invoking the great Bazil. His unbridled enjoyment inspired Tsubiyama to experiment, attempting with some success several sexual variations about which she had only read or heard reports. It was when they both lay exhausted that he produced his ultimate shocker.
"I have never done that before. I always thought it would be disgusting, but it is sublimely enjoyable, especially after the Bazil."
At first, Tsubiyama refused to believe him.
"How could you live this long, especially in the ZP, and still be a virgin?"
"It is shameful," he said, and actually blushed. Beginning to believe, she asked,
"How could you hide it?"
He looked down at his sheet-covered lap.
"One can pretend many things if one knows the culture."
Tsubiyama found this a quite erudite response, especially convincing when he looked at her with calf-like eyes and asked,
"You will keep my secret?"
"Honey, lamb, it's our secret. Hey, I never had a virgin before. You're a first for me, too. Wow, the things I am going to teach you."
"You will be kind."
"As gentle as I can be."
She smothered him with kisses and felt his body tremble with renewed excitement.
"You learn fast, sweetie pie. What we're going to do now is called the Australian crawl."
"Afterward, could we have more Bazil?"
"Anything your little heart desires, sweetie. You know, I like this. Sex hasn't been this much fun since my first orgy back in Dallas."
The proliferation of cult movements in the latter half of the 21st century set the stage for the technological refinements and sophistication in the present runaway spread of such groups as the Raj Dude, following on Venus. That such blind manifestations display the corruption and hypocrisy found in earlier cultish power centers did not surprise your investigators. Cults and Cultists, an article in Psychology Today. Nishi awakened Lut with a cup of bitter coffee. She had brought a net bag containing the contents of his armor's pockets, and she had an odd expression on her face. She waited until he drained the cup, then...
"Who's Ryle?"
The cup fell from his hand and shattered on the floor. Lut sat up in bed.
"Where did you hear that name?"
"Never mind. You say we will make the marriage, and all the time you know your mother will not give us her blessing."
"She doesn't live my life," Lut snapped.
"I do not have the proper pedigree. Is that it?"
"She sure as hell will know where you worked on Venus, but that has nothing to do with..."
"I still have my honor."
Lyle sent a probing thought to Ryle.
"Where'd she learn about you?"
The Dreen did not reply.
"You sneaky alien. You told her, didn't you?"
Ryle remained isolated from him.
"I can see it is all true,"
Nishi moaned.
"I don't know how you did it, but I'll get you for this," Lut raged.
"You are two people in one body," Nishi said. "That is what I have seen in your eyes."
"This is my body and this is me," Lut said.
"And you can make notes that drop out of the air,"
Nishi sneered.
"So that's how you did it."
Nishi began to cry.
"If you made a gun for me right now, I would shoot you with it,"
she sobbed. Ryle found this shocking. Make a gun? He felt competent to image almost any manufactured product, provided he had raw materials and imprint. It was a higher form of dream creativity for which schooling and talents had prepared him, but... a weapon? If he imaged a weapon... he would be the first Dreen to do such a thing, and he did not relish the distinction.
"You've really done it this time," Lut accused. "We need her to survive, and you've made her our enemy."
Ryle was shocked out of isolation. "Why do we need her?"
"One wrong word from her, and we're dead."
"You're dead. I could survive."
"Staked out on the plain?"
"They wouldn't."
"Shall we test it?
Let's say I rape her and see what happens."
"No, wait."
"What?"
"She wants marriage. Promise her marriage."
Lot thought about this. Married
to his knee? Wasn't that what every dream encounter told him he most desired? But the mystical oddity of such a union filled him with fear. How could I dream about her before I even knew she existed? Perhaps it's a glitch in the original image of her, Lyle offered.
Glitch?
An anomaly in the imaged plan.
I don't like it.
You mean you really wouldn't like being married to her?
Lut stared at Nishi. She had stopped crying, but she looked at him with an odd expression of fear and something else.
Hope?
Nini, my sweet, Lut said, we need each other. You want to go back to Earth as...
I do not need anyone. I survive quite well on my own.
And you would not like to be the rich wife of a rich man? She put a finger to her chin, and her expression definitely was one of calculation.
So you remember my ancestry.
And I want you.
What? You never speak of love. It is always what?
Isn't love just wanting?
It is more. Much more.
I have never even considered marrying another woman.
And you truly wish the marriage with me?
Yes, damn it.
An enchanting smile dimpled her cheeks. Then I will ask General Claude to negotiate the marriage contract for me after we make the arrangement to lease in your invention.
Is that a yes? We'll be married?
Provided I get a satisfactory contract, and you explain to me about this person, Ryle.
First, a small precaution, Lut said. He took his father's spy detector from the net bag and scanned the room. The device flushed out a spy dot on the bed's headboard. Lut pried the thing out, examined it, and destroyed it.
A listening device only, he said. Whose?
The Legion of the Sazonon, she said. No one else could possibly do it.
Just on the possibility that I've missed more of these things, I'm going to delay telling you about Ryle, he said.
But you promise?
I promise.
She should know how empty your promises are, Ryle sneered.
Shut up, you dream sneak. I've saved our bacon for now, but I'm not forgetting about you. Maybe we'll make an Inserum hang glider and ride the winds of Venus.
Look, there is another matter,
Nishi said.
What now?
The Fugu chefs wish me to do a story about them and...
Do it. You'll be a regular reporter yet. Maybe General Claude would grant you an interview, and you might do a piece on the grunts fresh from the field.
You make me work for my pay. That is good. But there is a matter I hesitate to mention because it is delicate.
Delicate? How?
My guru knows you are here.
Your guru? Lot began to laugh.
Do not make the joke of it. He is the most important guru on Venus, the Raj Dude. Many legionnaires go to him for advice. My own father swore by him.
And got killed anyway?
Because he did not take the Raj Dude's advice.
How does this dude know I'm here?
I told him and he ordered me to tell you it is very important he meet you and talk to you. Very important. He said that several times.
What the hell could a nutty guru want with me except my money and influence?
He is not like that. He is very spiritual and never asks for donations. He has but one goal in life, to help the needy.
Sure he does.
He was very worried about me. That I might be attacked in here by a drunken legionnaire. He gave me a magical incantation for escape and told me to use it if I am in distress. And now he has told me to say the magic words when I am with you.
And then he gave you a little doll to stick pins in.
No, Lut. The Raj Dude is no ordinary man. He has power so much that he fears no one, not even the Legion. I knew if I told you this you would think it silly.
Lut grinned at her. Are you distressed with me?
I am very distressed.
Then say your magic words, but if they don't work, you have to get into bed with me. Okay?
She stamped a foot. Sometimes men are just awful.
Let's hear the guru's magical incantation.
Very well. But I will never get into your bed unless we have the marriage contract and the proper ceremony. I think you are not to be trusted, Lot Hansen, Jr.
What's supposed to happen when you use this incantation?
You will see.
She pressed her lips into a grim line and closed her eyes. In a low voice, she said,
Om Mani, come to me, my melancholy baby. Padme sayonara. Slide down my cellar door.
As she uttered the final word, a brilliant flash of red light filled the room, forcing Lot to close his eyes. He felt himself falling and was brought up short, sprawled on a hard surface. He opened his eyes and found himself on a transparent floor inside a metallic cylinder that stretched upward as far as he could see. There was no sign of Nishi, the infirmary room, his bed. Everything gone. He was alone in his infirmary pajamas.
That was a spiral phenomenon,
Ryle interjected.
Not really alone, am I?
Slowly, Lot sat up and looked down at the transparent floor. The cylinder also stretched downward into infinity. Lot's stomach lurched and he tasted bile in the back of his throat. The transparent floor felt suddenly insubstantial. There were no sounds here except those of his own movements, no smells except the acridity of his own fears.
What do you mean it was a spiral phenomenon?
Lot asked. Before Ryle could respond, a disembodied male voice, deeply resonant, intruded.
This is the Raj Dude.
For Christ's sakes, where am I?
Lot got to his feet.
You know me as your Uncle Dudley, the voice said.
Uncle Dudley? You're this Raj Dude?
Think of me only as the Raj Dude. Look at the floor.
Lot looked down and again tasted bile.
That floor is your will to live, the voice said. If you lose the will to live, the floor will disappear.
Come on, Uncle Dudley, no more jokes.
This is no joke.
Is that what you've been doing since you disappeared 25 years ago?
I have never disappeared. I have penetrated the secret of spiritual ascendancy. Observe.
Static crackled at Lut's side, and Nishi materialized there holding Lut's net bag. She stumbled and dropped the bag. It fell through the floor and soon vanished from sight.
That bag has no will to live,
the voice said.
Hello, Nishi, my dear. The floor under you is Lut's will to live, and yours now, too. It is all that supports you within infinity.
What are you doing, my guru?
She whispered.
I am testing Lut, my dear. I have a message for him.
Look here, Uncle Dudley, Lut said. This is no way to treat your own nephew.
What?
Nishi said.
What are you saying?
That's my mother's elder brother. He used to work with my father, but they had a falling out and...
No falling out, Lot, the voice said. I merely achieved enlightenment, and your father remained in darkness.
Yeah? Well, I heard it was a question of something you two invented together. Is this place...
You display ignorance and a lack of proper respect, the voice said. Be serene, and listen to my message.
I don't know what the hell you're up to, Uncle Dudley, but say what you have to say.
Your father himself has given me this message for you. He wishes me to warn you your brother has conspired with Senator Woon to have you killed on Venus.
Maury? Conspiring to do murder?
I warned you about pushing him too far,
Ryle intruded.
I'm frightened,
Nishi whispered.
My brother's nothing to be afraid of, Lut said. He's a stumble bum who can't get out of his own way.
I think the floor is getting soft under us,
Nishi whispered.
Nuts, Uncle Dudley, you still there?
A clipped, mechanical voice responded. The Rajdoot has been called away on urgent business. This is his answering service.
Nishi clutched Lut's arm.
The floor is definitely softer.
Whoever the hell you are, Lut flared, we came here because this Raj dude said Nishi could use his stupid words for escape.
The escape clause, yes, the mechanical voice said. Ah, I see. There was a message he agreed to give you personally. Have you received the message?
I received his damn message.
Under the circumstances, perhaps it is better you await his return in the waiting room. I am sorry he left no instructions, but his departure was quite abrupt.
What?
Nishi gasped. He looked down and saw her feet sinking into the floor.
Hey! Lut shouted. Get us out of here! Send us back to the ship where we came from!
I am indeed sorry, the mechanical voice said, but I have only limited powers, and there is the injunction of the escape clause. I can only send you to the Raj Dude's waiting room. The Chinese on Venus want their enemies to believe they use only mindless masses and can conquer by sheer numbers and rocket inundations. This skillful propaganda is designed to undermine Legion morale. Anyone promoting this viewpoint must be considered an enemy of France, subject to the most stringent retaliation. Claude Spelier de Colville, General Commanding, 9th Legion.
I have good news and bad news, Mugli said.
He confronted Jongleur in the lowest anteroom of Habiba's cone, a space she had set aside for him because of new demands on their time. It was a tiny, west-facing, dark space, made even darker by the filter effect of their new planetary shield, which reduced the afternoon sunlight by at least half. Through the single window behind Mugli, Jongleur could see the sun, a dim speck in a dull sky.
Let's hear it, Jongleur said.
But I was hoping to tell Habiba herself.
She has ordered me to hear all messages and relay only the most important. Habiba contemplates the shield and its effect on Drina.
I hear the flaps allowing sunlight to fall on seed houses are working very well, Mugli said.
Is that your good news?
That is no part of my news. It was merely a comment.
Mugli, you are wasting my time. What is your news?
Which do you want first, the good or the bad?
In whatever order you care to give it.
The bad news has several components. First, we have no contact with Prosic on Venus, although there are distinct signs that Hansen employs his crude spiral technology there.
Mugli cleared his throat portentously.
Second, Earthers continue to probe Patricia for her secrets. They appear jubilant about their latest efforts, although we do not know what they have achieved.
You consider that news I dare convey to Habiba?
Why not?
You think she might order the immediate dispatch of the new erasure ship?
Mugli shrugged.
You should know better than I. That brings me to the good news. The new ship shall be ready within the week. We are putting in the finishing touches right now. Those new imagers she sent me are superb.
Jongleur groaned.
You call that good news?
You are a poor loser, Jongleur, Mugli said.
How dare you speak so lightly of this?
Jongleur, I apologize. I know your son is still there in that accursed solar system, but we must think of all Dreendom.
Which is what I wish you would do. Earth is driving us insane. I sense disaster in whatever we do. Habiba, blessed Habiba. Mugli, she has changed.
Changed? In what way?
It is hard to describe. She sits silently much more than ever before. And she is short with me. She has never been short with me before. Mugli. I have heard her curse you.
Mugli was aghast.
Curse? Me?
And Wimpley the Voyager, who imaged Earth. She curses him, too. I have heard her curse both of you in the same breath.
Jongleur, I must speak to her.
No, she forbids it.
Forbid? But we do not have a thought con to...
She forbids the thought con too. I fear for her, Mugley. She looks and sounds so sad.
But the shield is working. We are protected. We have time to do whatever we...
Time? Is that not the very problem, Mugley? Have dreams ever before been concerned with time? We possessed infinity. Now what do we have? We have a dark sky and people who cower beneath it, wondering how long it will endure. We have petitions from dreams asking when Habiba will make her decision about Earth. When, Mugley? We mark time until her next pronouncement. All of us are concerned with time. We, who had infinity now, concern ourselves with bits and pieces of time. Earth has cursed us. Damn them and their finite impudence.
When I contemplate the infinite, I see the vitality of time. Our spirals, infinitely engaged, cannot touch all being and all substance. Those require time. If we ignore time and accept infinity as our holy and unquestioned right, then we are less than we might be. Is that not the lesson of Earth?
Habiba's Journal.
They arrived with a roar of static and a flash of red light in Raj Dude's waiting room. The place struck Lut as surprisingly ordinary until he looked at the window wall on his left. This gave him an angled view onto the metallic tube where he had arrived from the infirmary.
"Has it occurred to you to question your uncle about how he does this?"
Ryle asked. "Do you know?"
"As I said, it's obviously a form of spiral technology."
"That cylinder doesn't look like a spiral."
"But I can feel the tingle of spiral contact when we move at your uncle's command."
"Christ! Is that what he and Father fought over so many years ago?"
"I have no way of answering such a question. However, I would very much like to see his control center and observe the way it works." "Lut?"
Nishi tugged at Lut's arm. "What is it?"
"Is Raj Dude really your uncle?"
"That's what he said."
"How does he do this?"
"It's magic, and we're the poor natives who are supposed to shit green when he demonstrates his powers."
"How can you treat this so...
"I knew the old bastard. Look at this room, the chairs, that sofa, that table and those magazines."
He lifted a magazine and waved it at her.
"The Weekend Golfer. And there, a copy of Modern Psychiatry."
"But that..."
She pointed to the view into the cylinder.
"Yeah, that's something else."
"Where is the answering service person?"
she asked.
"There's no one here but us."
"I am not a person. I am a device." The mechanical voice came from nowhere and everywhere around them.
"What is it you wish of me?"
"Can the Legion or anyone else hear what we say here?"
she asked. "The Raj Dude does not permit eavesdropping."
"Lut, while we wait, tell me about this Ryle person."
"Why not?" Lut thought. And he said, "He's a drain who got into my body after I had an accident with my new spaceship."
"Got into your body?"
"Yeah, he sneaked in while I was unconscious."
"I did not sneak. I saved your life."
"But you didn't give me any choice."
Ryle lapsed into sullen isolation, shocked by the truth in Lut's response. Would Lut have chosen to die? He really was not asked.
"Can he talk?"
Nishi asked.
"I want to talk to him."
"Of course I can talk."
The voice was a shuddery falsetto as Ryle took advantage of Lut's surprise and assumed control.
"Stop that!"
Lut objected, but it was a voice that cracked and wavered. Face contorted and body twisted, Lut and Ryle fought for control.
"I don't care who sees this,"
Ryle said.
"I will talk to her."
Lut subsided into dismayed passivity. He sensed both anger and urgency in Ryle.
and there was that floral odor.
Earth and the solar system may be erased while this fool plays his petty power games, Ryle said, and he explained quickly about the erasure ship Patricia.
How can all of this,
Nishi waved her arms,
be something you made?
I did not make it. Wimpley the Voyager made it.
That's crazy.
I, too, suspect Wimpley of derangement.
She shook her head, seeing they were talking at cross purposes. Another thought struck her.
But the ship. You said it was wrecked in the collision with Lutt's ship.
They can always make another.
Are you finished?
Lutt demanded. You frightened her.
I'm gratified that someone shares my fears.
Why haven't you been ragging me about this?
I considered we had time, but on mature reflection I have begun to wonder.
Mature? You?
Stressful situations are known to mature one. It is odd how this does not apply to you, Lutt.
Go ahead, insult me. But I'm in here with you, and I know you're a tricky liar.
I have been utterly candid with you under extremely trying circumstances, and where the advantages of fabrication have been quite substantial.
Nishi had been staring at the window wall while she chewed her lower lip. She spoke without turning.
Ryle, you say you merged to save your lives. Can you be separated?
It is possible, but I'm not sure I have the proper facilities.
And the Zon Patrol will imprison you if they learn you are a dream in human guise?
Now see what you've done, Lutt raged. She can make me do whatever she wants by threatening to throw me to the ZP.
A gamble I thought worth taking. She desires a rich husband, and you can make her promise of silence a provision of your marriage contract, cutting her off entirely if she speaks.
Say, you're turning into quite a bargainer.
I am learning by observation. Look, something is happening out there.
A throng of people occupied a cylindrical area visible through the window wall. In their midst stood a tall figure Lutt recognized.
Uncle Dudley.
Time had been kind to his mother's ne'er-do-well brother. The man's angular features bore a benign expression. Skin smooth, blonde hair caught in a gray sweatband and draping across his shoulders. His blue eyes twinkled.
But that costume! Uncle Dudley wore a white robe emblazoned in red and blue letters. Raj Dude. Raj Dude.
He strode through the throng as imploring hands reached out toward him, but no one touched him. In the excitement of the moment, Lutt groped tentatively for control, and Ryle allowed it.
He is your uncle. Best you deal with him. But find out how that cylinder works.
The window wall abruptly distorted the view, and the scene wavered as though seen through water. But Uncle Dudley remained clear.
Spiritless, Lutt thought.
Uncle Dudley marched through the glass into the waiting room. The throng followed, distortion vanishing as they entered.
The area around Lutt and Nishi became jammed with sweaty, pleading people. They pressed Lutt and Nishi into a corner with the Raj Dude.
The guru silenced the babble with a great shout.
Eczema!
He put a finger to his cheek.
Or is it Eureka?
Noticing Lutt and Nishi, he said,
Forgive my abrupt departure, but Osceola required my presence. Now, where were we? Oh, yes, Mori and Woon, the conspiracy.
Without waiting for a response, he turned and looked across the people crowding the waiting room.
I have places to go, places to be.
Raj Dude be praised, the people shouted.
Those two are deserters,
Nishi whispered in Lutt's ear. She pointed at two men in Legion uniforms.
I have seen posters with their pictures.
She abruptly turned her attention to three Chinese in Mao Guard uniforms.
Heaven preserve us! Those are the enemy!
Lutt, too, studied the throng as they pressed closer to the Raj Dude. He noted a woman with a crying baby, a quartet of singing drunks whose accents sounded Irish, a woman in the uniform of a space truck driver, two women in gowns that bore the tiny DAA mark, identifying them as the Sazamon employees, a Sephardic Jew, a fat man wearing swimming trunks.
Motley was the only word for this group.
As the guru looked at them, the people once more began to submit their pleas. Lut had trouble distinguishing separate requests.
If you could only, I am afraid that my friend will, who said my husband, where is...
Silencio, Rajdood shouted.
In the abrupt silence, he lamented,
I am too kind. It's time to change my magic words.
I don't see how they could have prevented a rapist from attacking Nishi, Lut said. By the time she spoke those words, it'd all have been over.
He touched the guru's arm as he spoke.
You touched me!
Rajdood gasped. His face twisted in dismay.
Never touch a holy man!
Why not? Lut asked.
It's a rule, that's all,
the guru said. He touched his sweatband. Lut noted now that the band appeared to be metal. It was scratched and dented.
You are right about the length of the incantation, the guru said. I will make the new one shorter.
He clasped his hands in front of his robed stomach and stared pensively at Lut.
Uncle Dudley, I'd like to know how that cylinder works, Lut said.
You will address me as Rajdood, the guru said. The cylinder, as you call it, does not work. It just is.
Is that what you and father fought about?
The past is only the past, the guru said. Observe.
Without knowing how it happened, Lut saw visions from his past, a parade of scenes, images from a quarter century ago when Uncle Dudley visited. Most of the visions involved dinners at the long refectory table in the Hansons' main house above a lake, sessions where Uncle Dudley tried to explain his ideas to L.H. Sometimes there were arguments, and once L.H. left the table without finishing his meal. The visions ended with Uncle Dudley departing, and Lut realized he was seeing the last visit. Uncle Dudley never returned.
I ask why you never returned, Lut said. One of the help said you and father had a fight.
Reliable help is difficult to find,
Uncle Dudley said.
Now be still while I decide what is best. We cannot permit a fratricide. Mori must be frustrated. As for Woon, it is time we tested his will to live.
Lut found himself impressed. Uncle Dudley displayed a profound sense of dignity.
But what does he know of the spirals?
Ryle demanded.
Ryle must not disturb my meditations, the guru said.
He eavesdropped on my conversation with Nishi.
I did not eavesdrop. It is not necessary. I always know what I need to know. Be still, Ryle. Your predicament is not my immediate concern.
A hush fell over the room as the guru closed his eyes and bowed his head. Presently he looked at Nishi.
Yes, marriage would be best.
He looked at Lut.
One of you must always dominate your body, but with cooperation from the partner. To thwart Mori, you go to Earth immediately.
I have unfinished business here, Lut protested.
You cannot have a dancing foot and a praying knee on the same leg, the guru said. Benign monarchy is best.
What's he talking about?
Lut wondered. He's telling us to be tolerant of each other. He reminds me of Habiba.
Physical and ethereal are not truly separate, the guru said.
He waved an arm and the throng vanished from the waiting room, leaving only Lut and Nishi with him.
I wish you'd explain how you do that, Lut said.
You would try to understand, and that would prevent your understanding, the guru said. Think of it as magic.
Once more he looked at Nishi.
You love the part of him that did not knuckle under to his father. That is fortunate.
Uncle Dudley, Lut said, I have to know about these whispers that come out of nowhere and the people with bizarre names who appear so mysteriously to...
Do you love Nishi?
the guru interrupted.
Yes, but in your own way, I see you do.
Nishi felt a rush of warmth.
Lot admitted he loved her.
This made her feel responsible to him.
How can we leave when our negotiations with the Legion are incomplete?
She asked.
Others can conclude your business with the Legion, the guru said. Will you marry her, Lot?
My legal department will draw up a marriage contract, Lot said. You'll get a negotiator's percentage.
Never try to snow a guru,
the Raj dude said.
Nishi, guard Rael's interests. I fear he may never return to Drina. Now off you go. Osceola awaits.
Wait, Lot objected. I have to ask you about Vor spirals and...
The essence never waits,
the Raj dude shouted, adding in a lower tone. Of course, all that about essence is bullshit, but I teach it anyway. Now, indeed, you go to Earth.
Woon is on the moon. Raj dude incantation.
I tell you, it's like you set fire to an anthill.
Prosek's buddy, Hollis Weatherby, his helmet thrown back, stood in the living room, bedroom of Subiyama's Garantium quarters. The red-headed zone patrolman frowned at Prosek, who stood in green shorts near Subiyama's shoulder. Subiyama towered over him like a sumo wrestler in an immense pink robe with a golden belt.
You are right to come immediately with this, she said. What time is it?
6:45. We got a couple hours yet before our morning shift, but Harper called me at the barracks and asked, should we tell you? I went and had a look. It's a madhouse. So like I said, I called this friend.
Go through it again, Subiyama said. Exactly what did you see?
People running around, shouting. The big French general himself stood outside the lock of that flying cat house telling people to go this way and that way. I heard Hansen's name called, but there was no sign of him, unless they gave him Legion armor.
So then you called this friend of yours in the Legion?
Well, he's kind of a friend. My sister back on Earth is married to the guy who smuggled this guy out of Marseille and got him the false papers so he could join the Legion. She wrote me about him and... well, we've had a few drinks together.
And what did he say?
He says this Hansen sneaked off the ship in his bare feet in pajamas with a dame, someone they call the Virgin Chanteuse. If you can imagine a virgin in a cat house.
That sneaky son of a bitch.
They're watching the spaceports, but shit, with all the Hansen loot behind him, the bastard could be anywhere.
You think Hansen's really taken French leave?
Yeah, I think so. My friend was real excited. Said the Legion would fry Hansen's ass for running off with this woman. She's some kind of pet or something.
What chance would he have getting off Venus?
Well, lady, you can buy anything here.
Weatherby leaned to one side to address Prosek.
Lou, I got a message for you from the captain. He wants to see you right away.
Could he say why?
No, but the duty sergeant says it's about your re-up. He says your papers were late arriving and you're 10 days past your re-enlistment date. It's just routine.
Wait a minute, Subiyama said. Does this mean you're no longer tied to the ZP, Lou, honey?
Weatherby grinned.
Lady, on Venus they got you because they got your ass. He re-ups or they lose the voucher for his return transport. That's why they sent him to Venus. This is punishment duty.
But if he has a return ticket?
She asked.
Then they confiscate his armor. That's ZP property.
How much does a good suit of armor cost?
She asked.
30,000-40,000, it all depends.
She smiled softly at Prosek.
Lou, honey, why don't you just send word to this captain he can stick his re-up where the moon don't shine?
Prosek was startled. But what would I...
Honey, my family made it in oil when we still had it. I can stake you.
She pinched his bottom.
For a price.
Where would I go? Prosek asked.
We, honey. We would go back to Earth. I got me a hunch that slick bastard of a Hansen is headed home to collect on his little promotion scheme. He came up here for one thing, to sell his news service. The word is, he did that and big,
Now it's time to go put his Stetson under the jackpot.
But what would I do?
You would keep me happy, honey, and... Well, I've been thinking. You like that funny herb so much, I was wondering why we didn't set up housekeeping on some land I got near Austin. You could raise all the basil you wanted. Must be a market for it somewhere.
Prosek stared at her, hardly daring believe his good fortune.
Raise our own basil?
Basil, basil, whatever you want to call it, honey.
Prosek closed his eyes and wondered if he dared attempt his own limited imaging. Some little gift, something to show his gratitude. But it would raise unanswerable questions. This sweet earther must never learn his dream origins.
What about it? She prompted.
Anything you say, my sweet Abiba, he said.
That's the way to talk, honey.
Weatherby smirked at Prosek.
Of all the damn fool luck. I don't know what you got, Lou, but it must be something.
You know, I may get my keister in a sling, but I'm going to enjoy carrying this message to the captain. That little pissant is going to shit green.
Prosek slipped an arm around Tsubayama and caressed her bottom lightly. She grinned at him.
This could be a good life, Prosek thought. Some way would have to be found, of course, to sabotage the erasure ship and alert the zone patrol if any new ships arrived.
Anonymous letters? Perhaps. To Weatherby, Tsubayama said,
You're all still on the payroll. See if you can confirm whether Hansen skipped. I'll get on to my Earth contacts. He shows up down there, we'll know.
Oh, Siola! Oh, Siola! Oh, Siola!
Morning aerobics chant. Spirit Glass Factory.
I wonder if your Uncle Dudley has found a way to Edbridge, Ryle asked. That might explain this phenomenon.
Lot did not bother answering. He felt too euphoric, but without a physical rush. From the waiting room to the cylinder, it had been but one step through that odd spirit glass. Nishi's sweaty hand in his, he looked back to see the spirit glass, but something at the end of the cylinder above the window demanded his attention. Venus, no doubt of what he saw up there. The hot red of the volcanoes seen without any cloud cover, the spouting fire of Chinese rockets. He and Nishi hovered in the cylinder, no floor under them, no wind, nothing substantial except for that silvery cylinder enclosing them. He began to doubt the enclosing wall itself was substantial.
Look!
Nishi tugged his hand and pointed downward. Plot looked down. At the other end of the cylinder, the gnarled blue marble of Earth grew larger with alarming rapidity. Now he could see browns and greens in the landscape. Other bits of color came into view with details of the surface, chasms, mountains, buildings. An airplane drew its contrail above the land. He saw an ocean, then a familiar outline of harbors and inlets. A city.
He's sending us to Seattle, Lutz said.
Is that your destination of choice?
It was a husky voice from behind them. Lutz and Nishi twisted themselves into a tangle as they tried to turn. When they had it sorted out, they still clasped hands, but at arm's length, and faced a darkly withered crone of a woman in a long dress printed with flowers and plants in brilliant greens, yellows, reds, and oranges. All of them were suspended in the cylinder with the tall buildings of Seattle just under them.
Well, what are you staring at?
The woman demanded. Lot tried to swallow in a dry throat. This was a very familiar face. His feeling of euphoria vanished.
Who are you?
Nishi whispered.
Osceola, in the flesh. Who else?
She grinned at Lot.
If it weren't for that damn dude, I'd drop you into the nearest nasty jungle. I like having a Hansen in my clutches.
She raised one gnarled hand and clenched it into a fist, twisting it in front of him.
I've never hurt you,
Lot protested.
Innocence is no defense,
she snarled. But she lowered her fist.
Well, where do you want to go?
My private office at the Inquirer.
She looked at Nishi.
You too, dearie?
Yes,
Nishi whispered.
I will go with that.
Women in love seldom show good sense, Osceola said.
How do you do this? Blood asked. We were on Venus and...
You Hansons never ask the right questions, Osceola said. And you never know when to just shut up and watch. That's one thing I gotta hand you, Uncle Dudley. Knows how to use his senses. Sometimes I wonder if he ain't really Seminole.
She waved her right hand, and a tennis ball appeared in it. She squeezed the ball, and it sprouted a lily that dissolved into a rattlesnake that became a cane.
Magic,
she said.
That's how we do it.
It's some kind of imaging. I know it,
Ryle intuited. Lut felt his eyelids close and the eyes swiveled inward. When they swiveled back and opened, Osceola held a dripping length of sea kelp, and there was a startled expression on her face.
If you knew how to do this all along, why are you wasting my time?
She demanded, glaring at Lut.
Was it you?
She shifted her glare to Nishi.
Or is it that damn dude with his little jokes? You're out somewhere, dude. You having your little laugh? I'll catch you, by God, you're not getting in my bed again.
Nishi squeezed Lut's hand.
It was Ryle, wasn't it?
She asked.
What in the name of 10,000 white devils does a Ryle have to do with this?
Osceola asked.
I did it, Lut said. But I cannot do the things you and Uncle Dudley do.
Liar,
Ryle accused.
How dare you take credit for my prank?
You want to explain to her who you are?
When Ryle did not respond, Lut said,
I apologize, Osceola. I'm just a beginner.
Pretty good for a beginner,
she said, shaking kelp and seawater off her hand.
You still want to go to your office?
If you please.
You're being very polite,
Ryle intruded.
This dame could dump us into a volcano if she wants.
She does appear to be a superior adept. It's very odd. I have been told other beings may find a way to image, but this is a combination of artistic talents I did not suspect. She does not even require a story ship, and if that was a spiral we came through, it was a most peculiar spiral.
Lot did not reply.
Mother of God, help us,
Nishi pleaded. Ryle found himself in possession of his merged flesh, his attention focused outward, concentrating with a power he had never suspected he possessed. The city lay close beneath, but still no wind touched him. He felt Nishi's hand gripping his painfully. There were people on the streets, a zoo, insects. He realized he could see the smallest living particles, things no Dreen or Earther ever saw with naked eyes. Abruptly, it was over. He and Nishi stood in Lut's private office at the Inquirer. Ryle had the odd sensation that his flesh had been disassembled and reassembled. The ability to see minutiae had vanished. The office odors were as he remembered, ink, coffee, stale dust, rancid food, the synthetic aromas Lut had caused to be sprayed here for his own peculiar reasons. It suddenly occurred to Ryle that smells were an area of imaging he had never truly explored.
What a delightful idea. If I ever image a world, it will be a place of marvelous aromas, a place difficult to describe even in an assimilated story.
You okay, Lut?
Aide Stewart in his electric cart sat in the doorway. Ryle felt cold. He clutched Nishi's hand. There was no internal sign of Lut. What was he doing?
Are you there, Lut?
No response.
I'm okay,
Ryle said, trying to emulate Lut's voice. Nishi looked at him with a questioning expression. His voice sounded different.
The other one did that story in the Venus Bordello,
Stewart said, looking at Nishi.
A great job. You people sure made a fast transit. Did the military bring you back?
We, had a special service,
Ryle said.
You sure as hell must have. Well, I'm glad you're back. Big story breaking. Zone Patrol found an alien in a high-security area the day after you left for Venus. They couldn't keep a lid on it. Rumors all over the place. They caught him. He got away. Who knows? We're on it with a full team.
We left the Vorkanners on the ship,
Nishi suddenly wailed.
The Legion will find out how they work and never pay.
The cameras are here, Stewart said. Just arrived by special messenger with a note, courtesy of the Raj Dude. Isn't that the crazy guru on Venus? You get a story on him, too?
No story on him, Ryle said.
How come you're in pajamas? Stewart asked.
We had to leave rather abruptly, Ryle said.
Copy, boy! Stewart bellowed.
A slender young man in a black single suit came up behind Stewart.
Sir? Get Mr. Hansen's clothes under the closet over there.
Stewart pointed to a door in the corner of the office. The copy boy squeezed past Stewart and went to the closet.
Any particular things you want, sir?
He asked, looking at Ryle.
Anything?
Ryle said. He looked at Nishi.
You sound very strange, Luck, she said. Did you get a chill during the... when we came?
I am fine, Ryle said. Where'll I put these, sir?
The copy boy asked. He held a pair of red trousers, a black shirt and white tie, a black jacket and white shoes with white socks, plus organdy boxer shorts.
There,
Ryle pointed to a desk.
You going to wear that outfit? Stewart asked. You'll look like a mafia hitman in a B-movie.
It's fine, Ryle said.
You do not sound well, Lot,
Nishi said. She put a hand to his forehead.
You are perspiring.
I am all right, Ryle said.
Lot, where are you, Lot?
Spiral News Service is a smashing success, Stewart said. We're making new sales every day. The special fund is healthy again.
That's fine, Ryle said, staring at the colorful pile of clothes.
What do you want us to do about the alien story?
Just carry on as you were.
Will you do one thing for me, Lot? Stewart asked.
Tell me how you got in here without any of us seeing you arrive.
It's a family secret, Ryle said.
I'm sorry, Lot, but I had a weird idea.
You see, the rumor is this alien came on some kind of ship that may be similar to the ship you're working on with Sam. The stories say it has something to do with, well, they say, spirals. I couldn't help but make the association with our news service.
Yes, of course, Ryle said. He wished Stewart would leave or shut up.
What had happened to Luck?
My weird idea, Stewart said. He pointed to a large gray box with a glowing orange screen standing against the wall to Ryle's left. I came along here because I heard that VOR data receiver chattering. And there you two were.
I thought, Jesus H. Christ, is he traveling by the spiral thing, too?
That is a weird idea, Ryle said. He looked at the orange screen. Flesh disassembled and reassembled? Did Osceola and Uncle Dudley transmit people as well as pictures?
Lot, where are you, Lot?
Still no sign of his fleshmate. Ryle suddenly felt bereft. How could he simulate Lut's behavior and carry on without the damned Earther? Already Nishi was suspicious. Could he fake an illness?
Were you transmitted on that machine?
Stewart asked.
Perhaps we were, Ryle thought. Did it separate us?
He did not dare allow himself to hope. Abruptly, Ryle freed his hand from Nishi's, thrust himself past Stewart, and bolted down the hall. Stewart's voice fluttered after him.
Your clothes, Lot! You're not dressed!
What was it Raj Dude had said about an essence?
It occurred to Ryle that Lot might have been delayed in transmission, and at this very instant might be trying to find their body.
I must get as far away from that Vordata thing as I can.
Slipping and skidding in his bare feet, Ryle dashed in his pajamas down a hallway to a door marked Exit and pushed through. He found himself on concrete steps and went down two and three at a time, counting the landings marked on doorways he passed. At the first floor, he slammed open a heavy door and burst into the lobby. It was cold tile and chilled his feet. A mirror wall confirmed that he still looked like Lot, but he had lost his glasses. The mirror showed him something else that dismayed him. Lot's mother strode toward him across the lobby. Ryle turned from the mirror and saw that she recognized him. She stopped. Phoenicia Hansen's mouth dropped open in shock. A look of horror came over her face, her mouth contorted, sharpening the creases of the corners. Only one thing to do, Ryle thought. If he spoke to Lut's mother, she might suspect he was not her son. She had heard the story of the body invasion. He dashed past her.
You!
She screeched as Ryle ran past.
What terrible thing have you been doing? Those pictures from Venus were base. I've never been so humiliated. What are you doing, Lut?
He ignored her and plunged through swinging doors to the sidewalk. There he slowed to a smooth, jogging stride. People looked at him strangely, but joggers were a familiar sight. A man called out,
"Hey, tough guy, love your PJs. Is barefoot the new way to jog?"
"Shit, where have you taken us?"
It was Lut, a frantic thought in Ryle's awareness.
"Where are we going? Why are you running?"
Ryle came to a stop and leaned against the lamppost. He felt ill, both dismayed and relieved.
"That damn Osceola, she's still doing things to us?"
Ryle held his thoughts to himself, trying to maintain bodily control, but Lut was pressing. Ryle felt muscles tremble and jerk.
"That bitch, she sent me through hell. I've been inside a volcano. An insect eaten by a bird. I was some kind of fish chewed up by a shark, and even worse. And all the time I could hear her laughing. Damn chicken cackle. Where the hell are we, Ryle?"
"On the street near the Inquirer."
"Where's my Nishi?"
"In your office, the last I saw her."
"Why are we still in pajamas?"
"No time to change."
"I'm taking over, Ryle. Let go of our body, or I'll make sure we do something the ZP is sure to hear about."
"Your mother's in the Inquirer lobby, and she's angry."
Ryle allowed him a memory glimpse of the encounter.
"Why'd you run like that?"
Lut asked. "It seemed a good idea at the time. I, too, dislike that Osceola creature."
"She do something to you, too?"
"I do not wish to discuss it."
"Neither do I. Now get out of the way, Ryle, baby. I'm taking over."
With a definite feeling of relief, Ryle relaxed his hold on their flesh and felt Lut assume control. Ryle found himself astonished at how welcome it was resuming the observer role.
"Am I becoming a voyeur?"
People stood all around him on the sidewalk, some passing, some standing to gawk. Omen said,
"He does not look well."
A man said, "Hey, that's Lut Hansen, Jr. You sick, pal?"
Lut looked to his right. The Inquirer was two blocks away and across the street. He recalled the Lowtown incident and the young woman spitting on Phoenicia's hand.
"I'm out here without Hansen guards, and these people know who I am. Not good."
The man who had asked about his health stepped one pace closer.
"You need help, Mr. Hansen? Your foot's bleeding. Why are you barefoot?" "It was a bet, and I won,"
Lut said.
"Those crazy Hansens,"
one of the gawkers said. Laughter greeted this, but it was a friendly outburst.
"Excuse me,"
Lut said. He pushed his way through the throng. They yielded easily. Someone asked,
"How much did you win?"
"Plenty,"
Lut said.
"Way to go,"
a man shouted. More laughter. There appeared to be no enemies here, but Lut walked back to the Inquirer at a brisk pace. He did not breathe easily until he was in the lobby and saw a squad of Hansen guards trotting toward him.
"We were just coming to look for you, sir,"
one said as they closed in around him.
"You shouldn't leave without us."
There was no sign of his mother in the lobby.
"Have you seen my mother?"
Lut asked.
"She went out, sir," a guard said. "But she wants to see you pronto. Where do you wish to go, sir?"
"Back to my office for some clothes, and then we'll go to the Hansen compound. Does anyone know where my brother is?"
"Mr. Morey is out of town, sir," a guard said. "An errand for your father."
"Sent him someplace to keep him away from me, I'll bet," Lut thought.
"But your brother has criminal companions," Ryle reminded him. "Would they not do his bidding? And where is this wound?"
"I'll have to find out."
"You live a very dangerous life, Lut. But I'm beginning to see its attractions."
"Upsy-daisy, downsy-daisy, kicksy-daisy, stampsy-daisy, pixy-daisy, stripsy-daisy, tearsy-daisy, killsy-daisy."
Children's chant from the childhood of Lut Hansen, Jr. The noonday sun, hot and brilliant behind her, Lorna Subiyama paused in the opening of the French doors from her pool patio near Austin, Texas. In a custom-made pink swimming suit that gave the illusion of enormous nudity, she ignored the wet trail she left as she moved into the room's shadows. Prosek, wearing a lemon-yellow jumpsuit, stood at a table near the center of the room, leafing through a stack of papers.
"Carmelita said you wanted to see me muy pronto, honey," she said. "What you want, I hope."
"Oh," Prosek looked up from his papers. "Your office called. Hansen's been seen in Seattle. There's a message. They said to tell you right away." He pointed to a VidCom screen built into the wall on his left. She gave his bottom a hard slap, leaving a wet handprint as she passed him.
"How are you coming on the garden plan, sweetie?"
"We plant tomorrow. The marketing people arrive next week for planning, and they want to hire a lab."
"Why do they want to do that?" She stopped at the communicator and touched its keys.
"They want a better way to ship Bazile fresh. If we can get it as far away as New York undamaged, profits will be very big."
She leaned close to the VidCom screen, reading as she spoke. "You got a good business head, Lou, honey. Wouldn't be a bit surprised if we made a killing in your Bazile."
"I learned from you, my sweet Abiba. It was edifying when you made a profit from resale of my armor after our return."
"Paying for our honeymoon, isn't it?" She glanced back at him. "Mr. Lou Subiyama." "Man, I thought that clerk would freak out when you told him you'd take my name. And that preacher."
"It is an odd custom for the man's name to dominate," he said.
"My great-grandmother was Choctaw, and she used to say the same thing. Said it was a wise child knew his own father, but you sure know your mother. Said white folks were crazy. A woman's name disappears like sugar in the water. You got any Indian blood, honey?"
"I do not think so. Was it an important message?"
"Hansen's been seen in Seattle. The bastard was running down a street in his pajamas. Honeymoon's over, Lou. It's back to work. Turn the planning over to Jesus. He's a good majordomo. Put the marketing people on the back burner. We're going to Seattle."
"Yes, my sweet Abiba."
She strode to his side, swung him around, and enveloped him in a gigantic hug. "I still can't believe my luck, honey," she said. "You really love me. You don't want me to diet. You just..."
"Do not change, sweet Abiba. I love all of you."
"That's what I mean. Say, you've never explained why you call me sweet Habiba. It sounds Arabic."
"It is a thing of my infancy, a mother figure."
"And I thought you were Irish."
"Is this world not called a melting pot?" She hugged him tightly.
"That it is, sweetie. Have you thought about us having kids?" His voice was muffled against her bosom.
"I often think of little else. Us sitting by the seed house."
He broke off, recalling the reproductive system employed by Earthers. She pushed him away slightly. "Sitting by the what?" He caressed her abdomen.
"The seed house where our infant would grow."
A great bellowing laugh shook her. "You got gardening on the brain, honey. I love it. Now hurry up. We gotta get packed. There's a big story in that Hansen bastard, and we're gonna get it."
Imaging is not a singular process. Complexities encompass many variations, one procedure for life forms, another for inanimate objects, another for correcting mistakes. Variations must be infinite. In an infinite universe, one does not impose limits on infinity. Habiba's Journal. Nishi gasped as Luck led her into his house in the Hansen compound outside Seattle. The house, one of five, set among tall silver firs around a lake, was cool and shadowy on a hot afternoon. The senior Hansen's home was just visible on a cantilevered platform over the water on the opposite side of the lake. Like Lutz's home, it was built of a Hansen proprietary material, fabric wood,
that mimicked natural wood, but never needed painting and was impervious to insects and rot. The senior's home appeared to be a series of bleached silver blocks stacked together, but Lutz's dark brown home drew on Japanese tradition and sat almost concealed in trees and bushes. Maury's home to the east copied that of his parents. The other two residences, occupied by guards and aides, lay completely hidden in the trees.
"It is so beautiful,"
Nishi said. She looked at Lutz beside her in his red, black and white clothes. The foyer where Lutz and Nishi stood was lined with potted bamboo and led to steps that went down into a lower living area furnished in wicker.
"I'm glad you like it," Lutz said. "I had a cute little Jap guy design and build it."
"I do not like that way of referring to him,"
Nishi said.
"I have Japanese ancestors as well as French."
"Japanese, Jap? What's the difference, long as you know what I mean?"
"Sometimes we mean more than we think."
She went down into the living area.
"Perhaps I should not have come here."
"Why not?"
"He will try to take liberties."
"And you don't have legionnaires to protect you here?"
"Oh, I think I have a protector. Ryan, would you protect me?"
"You try to hurt her and I'll cause trouble,"
Ryle intruded.
"What the hell could you do?"
"I think I can prevent the flow of blood to a certain inflatable part of our body."
"You wouldn't."
"Nishi has been charged by your uncle with protecting me. I, in turn, will protect her."
"You son of a bitch."
"I am the son of dreams. That is distinctly different."
"Why do you not respond, Ryle?"
Nishi asked. Grasping for voice control, Ryle spoke in a weak falsetto.
"I can protect you. I have warned him."
Lutz wrenched back control of their voice and shouted,
"Someday I'll get you, Ryle. You just see if I don't, and when I do, baby..."
"You see?"
Nishi asked.
"I will never be far from my protector."
Sullenly, Lutz said,
"There's a guest room up the stairs on the right. I'll have the housekeeper bring you some clothes."
"You have clothes for your women guests?"
"We have a lot of things here."
"And so many servants."
"You saw the dogs and guards when we came in? Nobody gets past the boundary fences or leaves unless they belong. Just you remember that."
"That is not a very loving thing to say, Lutz."
"I'm getting tired of your cat-and-mouse game."
"You are accustomed to getting what you want when you want. Yes, I see that."
"Asiota said you love me. Is it true?"
"I begin to wonder if it is you I love, or if I have seen Ryle in you and perhaps love him."
"Shit!"
Nishi spoke in a soft voice.
"My guru says you love me in your own way, Lutz. What is that way?"
Lut glared at her in angry silence.
"Yeah, I love her. She's my Nini. But what kind of hell must I go through to get her?"
"Perhaps she will be required to change,"
Ryle offered. "In a pig's ass. She's the one who's going to change."
"Would you still love her, then?"
The question shocked Lut. Before he could respond, there was a pounding on the front door.
"Lut! You're in there, Lutz. I know you're in there."
It was L.H.'s familiar, angry bellow. Lutz stepped to a wall, slid a concealed panel aside, and pushed a button. They heard the front door open. L.H. lurched into their presence on his canes. His prosthetic eyes probed for them like insect antennae. He stopped short and stared at Nishi.
"What have we here?"
"This is Nishi D'Amato,"
Lutz said.
"We ought to be married,"
Nishi said, and then wondered why she offered this information. L.H. eyed her up and down.
"Are you really?"
"Yes."
Lutz's voice was unmistakably sullen.
"This is a pretty sexy lady you got here, boy,"
L.H. said.
"You already tried her out?"
"That's none of your business," Lutz said.
"Flying hard to get, is she?"
He turned his attention to Lutz.
"I tell you something that is my business. You put your own locks on this place. I warned you not to do that. This is my home. I'll lock it any damn way I want. It's my compound, boy."
"You going to kick me out?"
Boy, why do you rile me so? You could boss the whole shebang if you ever come around to it.
And be another one of your slaveys?
I'm not going to fight you about it now, but you change those locks or I will.
And make it easier for Maury to get in here, too?
Sure. You got my warning. How is old Dudley?
He looks fine.
Stupid son of a bitch. Always worried about what our inventions would do to people. I always said, long as they make a profit, who cares?
You see, Lot? Nishi asked. I told you the Raj dude is a good man.
Lot ignored her. You've seen the profit sheet on my spiral news service, Father. What do you say now?
Peanuts. Enjoyed the story about the Legion Whorehouse, though.
Nishi did that story,
Lot said, and grinned at her maliciously.
Did you now?
L.H. looked at her with a new interest.
You one of the girls?
I am still a virgin, she said.
Christ on a crutch! What you got here, boy?
Lot glared back at him solemnly. L.H. nodded as though coming to a private decision.
So you got my message about Maury. What you doing about it?
Looking out for myself.
What did you do to rile him so?
I got him to invest in my projects. Where'd you send him?
Sent him to Uranus. Some new hydrogen mining claims. He's doing it on commission. Be back soon. But you can rest easy, son. I broke the Maury wound connection and let the Legion take care of wounds hit men on Venus. Now, I want you and Maury in my office together when he returns.
He shifted his attention back to Nishi.
Who are your folks?
She stared at his prosthetic eyes as she told him.
Legion? That's a problem. Venetia will raise hell.
Because Hansons only marry quality? Lut asked, his voice deceptively soft.
L.H. responded with a barking laugh that broke into a fit of coughing.
Trying to suck me in with sympathy again, Lut thought.
When the coughing spell passed, L.H. said,
Didn't I teach you how to treat women? Maybe you're not as much like me as I thought. Maury, now.
He left it there. Peek, Lot asked.
You ever take him to the House of Delights?
Nah. I left his sex education to his mother. I think she showed him a book.
Once more, L.H. turned his attention to Nishi. He reached into a pocket and removed a gold pin emblazoned with a Hansen crest.
I gave this to Lut's mother when he was born. When she read that Venus Whorehouse story, she threw it at me and dented it. Was going to get it fixed. But now I think not.
He thrust it into Lut's hand.
Here. If you marry this lady, give it to her when she produces a son.
Lut accepted the pin, wondering what game the old man was playing now. Nishi, her face red, flared.
I will produce nothing for this family unless I have the marriage contract.
A contract now?
L.H. seemed delighted.
You looking for the pot of gold, honey?
It is the way of my family, and they were all heroes of the Legion.
Think of that now.
L.H. swung his prosthetic eyes toward Lut.
You have anything to say about this, boy?
Nishi saved my life on Venus. I owe her something.
Then pay her off and get rid of her.
Lut thrust the Hansen pin into his pocket.
Now, we're going to be married.
You are the most obtuse, knuckle-headed Hansen ever born. This is a gold digger after our money. Saved your life? She was saving it for herself.
She didn't know who I was when she saved me.
So she's a do-gooder. We don't need any of those in our family.
The old man's obstinate attitude only made Lut more angry.
You're not going to change my mind. We're going to be married.
L.H. swung his eyes toward Nishi.
So, you want a contract. Tell you what. You negotiate your contract with Phoenicia.
Casualties were heavy, but names are being withheld pending notification of the next of kin. Witnesses say the explosion took out the entire northwest corner of the ZP base. Presumably, the blast and subsequent fire also destroyed the mysterious alien spaceship, reportedly being studied there. ZP sources would neither confirm nor deny this, but national security censorship has been sought to suppress these accounts, and the NSC has refused to rule on this blanket of silence, reportedly acting on the President's orders. From an Inquirer story.
Something's going on in this burg, and it's sure as hell more than meets the eye,
Tsubiyama said. She sat at a portable VidCon in the office by her Seattle hotel bedroom, leaning forward to look directly into the eyes of the man on the screen.
We sent you up there to stay on top of this story, the man said. How soon can you file a follow-up on the explosion?
Don't press me, Jake. We're on to some hot leads, and you'll get 'em soon as we confirm.
We? You hiring help up there without asking for...
Lou's helping me.
That zone patrol swabby you're shacked up with?
Shacked up? Hell, we're married.
This story's too big for amateur...
Don't you get your bowels in an uproar, Jake. Lou's the one got us the inside account of what's going on at that base. He is one damn fine leg man. You forgetting he was in the ZP?
We need more now. They're beating the shit out of us.
She sat back and tugged at her lower lip. Then,
okay. I was going to hold this until Lou gets back with more, but you're going to have to credit unidentified sources, got that?
Shall I turn you over to rewrite?
No, you handle it, and don't put my byline on it. I don't want Hanson guards looking for my hide.
What have you got?
Lou says there's a story at the base that Lutt Hanson Jr. was involved in a crash with his alien spaceship. The ZP rescued him and held him incommunicado while they grilled him. When they released him, they exacted a promise he would not reveal anything about the alien ship.
Wow.
I'm not through. Hanson's ship, the one that collided with the alien, was an experimental thing that's supposed to be faster than a roadrunner with a burning match up its ass. His co-pilot in the crash reportedly was killed. We're still trying to confirm that and get the guy's name.
Jesus Christo.
There's more. They're now saying at the base that the blast occurred when investigators touched off a self-destruct system in the alien ship.
You were sitting on this?
The last was going to be my new lead.
Any luck on an interview with Junior?
Don't hold your breath waiting for it. He's gone to ground at that Hanson compound with all the guards and fences and dogs. He isn't even talking to his own paper.
You holding back anything else?
A little, but it's too hot to use without confirmation. Lou's doing okay, isn't he, Jake? For an amateur, I mean.
Give me a peek at what you're holding.
No, you might use it. You got your story. Go with it.
What about the woman he took out of that Legion Bordello?
There's a report. She's with him at the compound, but don't you dare use that.
What was she called? The Virgin Chanteuse?
I'm warning you not to use it. You check with legal. This doll can draw on the Legion war chest to sue us, or worse. Up on Venus, you hear stories about how the Legion takes care of people it doesn't like. Very, very bad news.
When you're expecting word from your Zeep leg man?
My husband should be here in about an hour. Now, you get off my back, or I'll find a news service that appreciates me.
End of Side 7. To continue, turn the cassette over.